Brothers, welcome back to the Gentleman's Journey. I'm Ewan Dunn, Alpha Phi Delta graduate of 2024. I'm here today with Brother David Seaton, Alpha Beta class of 83. David, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you for having us in your home. We are in Dallas, Texas at Brother Seaton's home. Thank you again for having us.
You're welcome.
It's very pretty out here. Made the trip in this morning, but we're glad to be here. We're glad to be able to talk with you. How you doing?
Doing great. Looking forward to the Christmas holidays.
You know, they really did sneak up this year. That's what I've been telling people. It's, you kind of go through it and you're like, okay, the holidays aren't here yet. But then once they get there, they go really, really fast after you get past Halloween.
It's incredible. You always hear when you're coming up that time flies when you get older. It's true. I mean, I can't believe it's already December and the end of the year.
What's it like having like Christmas as a grandparent? Is it a little different than when you were just doing it as a dad?
it's a lot more fun because you don't have to clean up anything, right? But they always tell you that having grandchildren is better than having children because you can give them back. But you're also at a point in your life, when you have kids, you get your head down doing your job, trying to create a career, being able to earn for your family, and you miss a lot, and you skip over a lot. Well, when you're a grandparent, you've got the time to kind of sit back and watch, and it's quite a joy and a privilege.
I'm scared for when it comes time for my dad to do it. Just cleaning up the wrapping paper on gift opening day is kind of his thing, so we'll see how he's able to really pass the baton, but I'm sure it's...
I have passed that baton.
Oh, yeah? And I'm sure you're not mad about it, right?
Not at all.
But again, just being in Dallas, I've been here a few times, but I always am seeing new things when I'm here, which I'm really glad about. Of course, you've been here for a very long time. How much of your life have you spent right here?
Well, we've been here since 06.
06? Okay.
We moved Fluor Corporation from California to here in 06, and I was living in Houston at the time. But we love Dallas. I mean, well, this is home. Dallas is a unique city. In my opinion, I've never seen a city that, when there's an issue or a challenge, comes together like this one does, the business community specifically. I know we had the mayor's conference. I'll give you one example. We had the mayor's conference here about 7 or 8 years ago, and none of the money for the Governors Association can be used for entertaining. So one of the leaders of the city called a bunch of us together and said, we need to raise $7 million to entertain these people properly. And within 2 weeks, we had raised all that money to showcase Dallas. Mm-hmm. and I think that's just a microcosm. When it comes to philanthropy, when it comes to the other stuff, the community is different than any other city I've ever lived in terms of give us a challenge, we'll go get it done. So we really enjoy it. I mean, it's from the arts and sports, obviously, the Cowboys, Stars, Mavs, the soccer team. It's a fun place to be.
And that's definitely kept you here, because you said, it's been since 06. And obviously, you being retired from Fluor right now, which we'll get into a little later, you're still here.
And well, there's an intelligence test there, too. Mm-hmm. There's no state income tax in Texas.
That's true. And honestly, better here than Florida or Tennessee. So,
yeah.
But, it is a really cool city, and I feel like there's a lot to offer. And so it's good that you've been able to stick around here. Obviously, you've not only had a lot of success in business ventures, but just being able to really enjoy the city, take it all in, I'm sure has been really, really great. So you spent about 35 years at Fluor before you retired, your last 8 as CEO, and then your last 7 as chairman. What was it like holding, a leadership role like that? Obviously, being in the company for a long time, I'm sure it had a much different feel, but you had been kind of advancing and you'd been a very big company guy for many years prior to that. What was that like for you?
Well, I mean, the engineering construction business is unique in that it's the only business I know of where you hurry up to work yourself out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a cadence to the things you get to do that's probably a little quicker than in a lot of different businesses. So, in my career, we've lived abroad for many years. I got to do a lot of really, really interesting projects around the globe and kind of made a difference in people's lives, really, because we're building communities and building that economic engine that people need and societies need. But 35 years is a long time with one company, and I was fortunate enough to have a career with one company, and you know, I was the kind of guy that was Mr. Fix-It. You know, they give me a challenge and I go do it, and that's what kind of led to the top job. And I never aspired to be that person, but I was lucky to get there.
Leadership of any kind tends to be challenging, and I'm sure you know that. What was holding several different positions, not even just in Fluor, but in many organizations? What has that kind of leadership taught you?
Well, I think to be a good leader, you got to be a good follower, and that whole empathy, EQ kind of a characteristic is really key, I think, to leadership, because it's hard to lead unless you've actually, you know, kind of been in the shoes of the other people that you're trying to lead. You know, I think that a lot of that came from being a Kasai, frankly. I think the way I was raised, obviously my parents had a big deal in that, but you really have to understand, you know, your self-awareness and who you are. But I never asked anybody to go someplace around the globe that I hadn't been to. Mm-hmm. And one classic example is I'd never been to Afghanistan. And we ran Bagram and all of North Afghanistan for the U.S. military. And in doing that, I'd sent people there, but I hadn't been there. So I got my security guys to make sure I went and spent the weekend there in January, which is not the most fun time to be in Afghanistan. But I think when people see that you're willing to go and do, they see that you're not just putting them out there, and you're part of that organization, you're part of that team, and I think that's that followership. Being a good follower is part and parcel to being a good leader. But you know, being a leader is sometimes daunting and difficult, because you know, you've got an objective, you've got a goal, and some of the members of your team aren't gonna rise to the occasion, and you've also got to show your team that you're willing to make the changes necessary, as difficult as they may be sometimes.
What would you say the most challenging part of it actually is? You mentioned like what it taught you. What is the toughest part about actually being in the thick of it? Because obviously, when you're in a position of leadership, you're not really thinking as much about being liked as you are trying to lead people well, and lead your company well, and do right by both of those things.
It's all the people. I mean, and it's the relationships you create and the objectives you give people to do. I mean, clarity and transparency, I think, are absolutely keys to that, because people have to see what you're willing to do. I talk about the people aspects. That's the most challenging, because you're not going to have all A players, right? You think about some of these all-star teams that don't really do so well, right? There's a B player and then maybe a C player every now and again that has a specific skill that you need to have. So being able to form that team, to weave those capabilities into a team that can actually accomplish the goal is what leadership is all about. I mean, you see it in the Alpha that you're in right now. There's folks that are neck deep and doing all the hard work for you guys, and then there's some that are kind of cruising. But those brothers are just as important.
Oh, absolutely.
To the overall. But being able to create a relationship that gets them more engaged, you're rising the tide for all ships.
I think it's a big part of creating that positive work environment, and not just for the people that are directly under you, but for everyone as well. As far as brothers go, what are important aspects of a work environment that brothers should look for when trying to select a job or a career? We've mentioned how we can produce that. What should people, and specifically brothers, look for when entering a new job, a new career, as far as working under someone, working in a certain place, certain environment? What should they look for?
Well, I think the first thing you got to figure out is, what do you want to do? You know, what's your passion? Mm-hmm. Once you find that, everything else is kind of easy, frankly. You're gonna work for people you don't like. You're gonna work for people you do like. But at the end of the day, it's all about what passion you have, for the role you choose. And then I think it's also finding the kind of relationships and people you want to be around. I mean, I always wanted to be around the smartest person in the room, because I wasn't. I always wanted to be around people that shared a common vision or a common characteristic. You know, when you think about, you know, the things that make Chi Psi, you want to be around people that espouse those kinds of characteristics. So it's finding your place is as much determining what you want to do and how you want to do it, but then sticking with it until you either find out that is what you want, or it isn't what you want, and then you make a change. I think a lot of generational change over time. I mean, it was not uncommon for somebody to spend 35 years with one company when I was coming up. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the case now. But I think, you know, when times get tough, that's when you learn the most. When things go bad, those scars are what you learn from. And sticking with something through those difficult times is as much part of that learning process as the good stuff, right?
I think all the scenarios you describe are not only exclusive to the workplace, but also you mentioned alphas as well. Whether you're in a position of leadership or just a brother who is, again, trying to better the culture and better all of his other brothers as men, also, as we're called to do. So rewinding a bit, as far as your own personal story goes, why did you decide to rush a fraternity at South Carolina, and what brought you specifically to Chi Psi?
Well, when I went, I didn't know a whole lot about fraternities, but I did have a lot of friends, because I grew up mostly in Florence, and then I went to high school in North Augusta in South Carolina. And you know, being a Gamecock was something that I wanted to be, and been following them since the early 70s when we had real basketball teams. Man, we were good. But in any case, there was a girl that was in the class ahead of me, and me and another brother, Donnie Cox, were in high school together, put us in touch with Dennis Way, who was our pledge brother. The rush chairman, and like we talked earlier, we spent a lot of time together before rush, during rush, and I just felt comfortable with the brothers that were there. I felt really welcomed, but I also was looking for something to make the environment smaller. Mm. You know, I mean, when you go to a big university like South Carolina, I mean, you know, when I was there, it was 27,000. Today, it's 42,000. You got to shrink that population to make sure that you feel that you fit in. I also saw in several of them a way to do well in school, mm-hmm. and help with that process.
I think also it's something we appreciate about Chi Psi is the fact that we've never been focused on being the biggest fraternity or being filled with the most brothers, but the most quality brothers, which I think is so important. What does brotherhood specifically mean to you? Like, when you hear that, what comes to mind, what do you think of, and why is it significant to you?
That's a great question. You know, brotherhood is the definition of the word in my mind. But there's a connection. And, you know, there's some phrases and activation that I still cling to that define the relationships that we forged. As we talked earlier, we had a pretty big pledge class for Chi Psi at the time, both in the fall and in the spring. And, you know, 40 years later, I can count on those people. I mean, I know who to call, and it doesn't matter what it is. You know, there's one brother that's had some health issues and some financial challenges, and it's an easy ask for the brothers to say, okay, what are we going to do to fix this issue or help this brother? There's something special about that, and it's hard to really put your finger on. But those relationships are some of the most dear relationships I've got, including my family. I'm as close to some of my brothers as I am to my family. And that's something that's pretty special and hard to develop sometimes.
I think it just goes to show that family's not only our blood, but who we choose to be in our family also.
That's true.
Is really important, and that's a lot of our brothers. And I think it's definitely something that makes us super special.
You know, it's like choosing a spouse, right?
Right? No, you're not wrong.
And it sounds a little bit weird, but these people are as close to me as my spouse is.
I think brotherhood is a very unique type of relationship, so I would absolutely agree with you. And I think your definition of it really speaks to
unique,
that.
Unique is the best word to use.
It is unique. Now, fraternity or not, brother or someone else, who has personally impacted your life the most as a man?
Wow. Obviously my dad was a big influence.
Absolutely.
But I'd say some of the coaches I had. Coming up, I played a lot of sports coming up, but there was one gentleman that we activated. He was the alumni advisor or the faculty advisor, and I actually worked for him before he became the faculty advisor at the University of South Carolina. He was in charge of all the facilities for the university, and he was the university architect. And he was kind of the first person in my life that told me I could do anything I wanted to do, because there was always a lot of the relationships and mentorships that I'd had prior to that. And his name was Dave Rinker. He's no longer with us, but Brother Rinker was somebody that really gave me vision, opened my eyes to what was possible, and put no roadblocks in me achieving any of those things.
And clearly, I mean, you've had a lot of experience in the business life, a lot of success in the business life. Even after retiring from Fluor, you're still very involved with several different things. You serve on the board of directors of the Mosaic Company, the National Association of Manufacturers. And you've been a part of several different groups, ConocoPhillips, still serving there. I know in 2011, you were appointed by the U.S. Secretary of Energy to serve as a member of the National Petroleum Council. So even after retirement, you still keep very involved in several different areas. What's kept you going? Is it just enjoying it, or is there something else that is really,
well, you got to keep your mind. I mean, I'm 60. It's not like I'm, I feel like 60 is the new 40, right? You got to keep your minds, growing. I mean, that's part of being a Kai Sai, is keeping your mind and body right. Being a Boy Scout, I mean, those kinds of things were instilled in me, and you still have to provide, as you said, I had a pretty long and successful career that came with the good and the bad.
Absolutely,
and those scars are worth passing on to others so that people don't make those mistakes. But one of the things I found in being a leader is, when you're in a leadership position, much is expected in terms of the outside world, and particularly the philanthropy world. I've done a lot of fundraising. I'm at $1.375 billion. In fundraising. A billion of it was at the university. I did the capital campaign there. But United Way, Boys and Girls Clubs, all those things. And you find, when you really get involved with the philanthropy world, how to make a difference. And, I'm the recent past chair of the National Boys and Girls Clubs. And when you see things like that, and you see these people that are less fortunate than you are, that have the intelligence, they have the drive, they have the personalities to do well, they just need a hand up. Not a hand out, but a hand up. And that's something that I've always kind of followed. You know, one of the things, one of the statistics, and I'm a math guy. I love to look at statistics and
absolutely.
Data. When I got involved with the Boys and Girls Clubs 17 years ago, The one statistic that got me involved at the local level was that 80% of the people incarcerated in America, federal, state, local, read at less than the third grade level. So when you think about those first kids that are coming into those Boys and Girls Clubs, they're in that second grade, first, second grade kind of age. If we can affect half of those kids to where they're reading on grade, look at the money that's going to be available from the federal government, the state government, to do the things that need to be done around education, because you're going to keep somebody out of prison. Mm. It's very simple things that you need to look for that create that passion or that linkage to what you do in your business life and what you do in your personal life and the things that you give back to the community. And I have just found such fulfillment. And I'll give you one example. The National Youth of the Year 6 years ago was a National Merit Scholar, not a finalist. A scholar. She's just finishing her specialization work at Johns Hopkins. As a high school kid, she and her mother and two siblings lived in a car under a bridge in LA. The club was her second home. The club provided the kind of opportunities that led to her being able to go to college. Wow. And now she's going to save lives as a doctor. Those little things matter in life. And that's part of that service, the service gene that we're all given as Kai Size.
So I think just listening to you cover your philanthropy and previous business experience, obviously, we talked about how it's just, it's integrated, it's filled with success. But I think a lot of people misunderstand that, one, success isn't really linear. You have to experience a great deal of failure often to get to where you want to be. What is some failure that you encountered earlier or later perhaps in your career, and how did that really bring you to where you are today? What did that teach you? How did it define you?
Well, as I said, the difficulties in life are, create the scars that you learn from. You learn more from failures than success. And In my business career, I had some jobs that did not go well, had some projects that did not go well. I was in circumstances that where I was being held back by certain individuals because I was doing their jobs, and they didn't want that. Those kind of things are the ones that kind of form your character. Mm. And make you better than you would have been had you not had that challenge. If you just go through life with successes, you've got a skewed life. One of the things that really stopped me in my tracks was when my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she's a breast cancer survivor. But those kinds of things, kind of stop you in your tracks. You have kids, and kids go to school, kids go to college, and there's kind of a normal cadence to it. But when something like that happens, it kind of snaps everything back into focus of what's really valuable in life. And that's one that stopped me in my tracks. On a more humorous or lighter note, I took three blonde-headed daughters and my wife to Saudi Arabia to live. We lived there for almost 5 years. 20 days after they got there is when the Al-Khobar bomb went off. Mm. It killed 17 U.S. servicemen and 200 other people. Working through that when your mother-in-law is asking, when are my grandchildren and my daughter coming home? Working through that took some challenge and skill to do well there. So, anyway, there's things in life that you do. There's challenges, but I think you learn more from the challenges than you do from the successes.
And obviously, failure doesn't exclusively come in the workplace, in the business place. It can come in the home. Previous interviews, we've really gotten good touches on what that's like. And I think, like you said, if life was nothing but success, that's not really a life worth living, I would say. So I really like that note. But keeping it within the business world, we have obviously a lot of graduating brothers this year, brothers that are about to enter the workforce. As far as trying to start off on a good note, because that's really important for success, what's a business tactic that you think everyone should try to emulate, really in any field?
Just work harder than anybody else. It's real simple.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, every door that opens, you got to walk through and perform. And you got to be there long enough to show that performance is sustainable. And then that next door open, and then you do it all over again. But I think the tenacity and the absolute focus on flawless performance, which you're never going to get, but seeking that flawless performance, I think, is what gives you the opportunity. I think that any successful business person or athlete or whatever, you know, when you ask them that question, they're going to say, I worked harder than anybody else. And that's certainly what I did. So I think, you know, making sure that you're committed to whatever you're doing. I mean, it's just like Tiger Woods, right? He'll tell you that his success is he commits to that shot. And that's the only thing he's focused on is that shot. It may be a good shot, might be a bad shot, but he's got focus and tenacity towards that focus. I think that's what makes the difference between, you know, being successful and maybe not. I just think that work ethic and that willingness to do what's necessary and tenacity is really something everyone should do and aspire to be.
I think being a yes man, that kind of sums up what you said. A lot of people.
No, I didn't say yes man.
Not exactly yes man, but like if you have someone who's over you and you're trying to advance, you have someone who's over you asking you to, you know, do something for them, do a task. Never be afraid to take up a project. Take advantage of an opportunity. That's probably what
saying yes to to opportunities. If that's how you define
that's how I'm
yes man,
in the business sense.
I'm okay with that. But nobody likes a yes man.
Not to everything.
Just telling you what you want to hear. You know, when Harris Pastides became the president of the University of South Carolina, he came and visited a lot of folks, a lot of alums. I was one of them. And I told him a bad story, one that as a new president he shouldn't have heard. And I told him, I said, you know, based on that story, why do you think I would ever give you any money? He called me the next week and he said, David, I really enjoyed our conversation. And I said, Harris, were we in the same room? He said, yeah, I think I found somebody who'll tell me what I need to know, not what everybody wants me to hear. Telling people what they need to know is not being a yes man. You know, separating the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, is what separates the leaders from the folks that just are getting along in life. And being willing to tell someone politely, you're wrong and here's why you're wrong, but never tell anybody they're wrong unless you got an answer for them. Right? Never ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. You know, you said you did some study on me. Well, that's part of that simple act of knowing what questions you're going to ask me. Same thing in business life.
Absolutely.
Absolutely the same thing.
Just a couple more finishing up. So taking it back to, you know, your undergrad experience. Again, we have thousands of undergrads currently right now who are going through experiences that you did, you know, back in 79 through 83. What is something that you wish you would have known when you were at that age, specifically within that undergrad experience? What's something you'd like to pass along to current undergrads right now?
Well, I think it goes back to what I was saying about the business life. I mean, you know, you're at a point in your life where you're starting, and you're trying to find your way. And there's lots of different paths. Not everybody's going to be a CEO. Not everybody wants to be a CEO. But whether you're a fireman or you know, running a boys and girls club, or whether you're CEO of a Fortune 500 company, that focus on purpose. And that focus on performance is key. It took me a long time to figure out what I wanted to do. I'm not an engineer, and I ran the biggest engineering company in the world. So there was a learning. I had to teach myself how to be a civil engineer after school. So I think the one thing I wish I had really paid a little more attention to was performance in the classroom. and maybe been a little better citizen earlier in life. I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about philanthropy and the things that I've been fortunate enough to be a participant in. I wish I'd done it earlier, because there's such joy in giving back and seeing some of these young people, in my case, you know, with the Boys and Girls Club, seeing some of these young people perform and succeed and become great citizens. Because, you know, right now, there's a lot of strife in the world, a lot of strife in the United States. Good citizenship, good performance, good attitudes is really what this world needs. And I think that's something CASA teaches in spades. That's part of who we are. And I learned that early in life.
It's very good. Transitioning to kind of the last part. Again, we talked about, we have a lot of brothers entering the workforce. We also have a lot of brothers who are about to become fathers. And obviously, we spoke at the beginning about what it's been like for you being a grandfather around Christmas time, having your grandkids here. Just talk to me a little bit just about fatherhood, especially starting out. What's something that our brothers should know that are about to become dads?
You got to show up. Mm. You got to be there. You know, I've got three daughters.
Girl dad.
I'm a girl dad. Girl dads rule. You know, I've always said if you have a diversity issue to deal with, give it to a girl dad, because you know they've got a little bit different perspective on life. But you got to be there. I mean, I traveled the world for 30 something years, but I never missed a dance competition. I never missed a basketball game. I never missed a play. I just work my schedule around it, because I think most of parenting is just showing up and being there and showing those children how they should behave. I mean, I had a thing where my daughters and I, once they got to be like 12 or 13 years old, I'd take them out on a date to show them how they should be treated.
Absolutely.
As a person first, as a woman second. And, you know, we're two for two on son-in-laws. Because they've chosen young men that I have great respect for, and I think that comes from me being there. Lynette, my wife, gets all the credit for the rest of the stuff.
Of course, but I think, I mean, you can agree, fatherhood's probably one of the best gifts of all time.
It's not a gift. That's the right way to put it.
And I think that a lot of our brothers are going to be able to realize that when they come into that situation soon. So thank you so much for being here with us today. Brother Seaton, I really do appreciate you sitting down with us. Thank you for hosting us. It's been a great interview. I hope you enjoyed it. We thank you guys for listening to this episode or watching, whatever source you're on. We will be back with more segments following this. Have a great week.